Sometimes you ever meditate, Dustin Cava? I know it's because cannabis. I know it's a brand new episode from Wayward Media, but I just have to know off the rip. Do you meditate, Dustin Cava? And if you meditate, do you make audible noises, or is it something you are, you know, kind of a silent but deadly meditator? Now you got all that talking, Dustin, and no one can hear you. That's what we got.
Oh my gosh, again.
Yeah, come on. We are like episode 50 and counting, Dustin Cava, here on Because Cannabis from Wayward Media, wayward.media at MeetWM socially. You would think, Dustin, after doing 50 plus shows together, when to unmute, but don't worry. I also unmuted wrongly at the beginning of the show. Anyway. Back to where we were, because I was starting with my like, which kind of sounds like a Led Zeppelin song or maybe a cat dying. I'm not sure. Are you a meditator? Are you someone who goes tranquil? Can you put your brain silent for 30 minutes or so?
No, I struggle with it. And if I meditate, like I get a massage, I'm extremely audible. Like,
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're one of those.
Clearly. Yeah, no, I cannot shut the brain off at all, ever. So meditation is not one of my stronger suits.
No, I've got something. I do like to try it. I do like try to relax. I try to think about nothing. And I do kind of make the noise. I see why. I think it's like in transcendental meditation, you have like a phrase that you use and you have to say that phrase. But it always like the act of like thinking of like the waterfall falls briskly in July feels pretentious to me. It just feels a bit pretentious. It feels a bit, it's like when people call you, like, do you like to be called Mr. Cava? Like when someone says Mr. Cava, does that bother you? Are you like, it's Dustin? How do you roll in the prefix world, Dustin Cava?
I do not look like a Mr. Cava. I don't look like a Mr. anything. So no, the hair, I got a lot of hair to stand up on the back of my neck, you know, when it does stand. And yeah, no, it makes me cringe a little bit. I don't have any authority to be called Mr. in anything.
No, I don't mind it though. I've been called Mr. Wayman, you know, as an instructor at the Cleveland School of Cannabis and other places. So I get that. I like to call people Mr. kind of unironically, but, you know, not like in a Mr. Anderson from the Matrix way, but just kind of like Mr. Cava, like just like a Mr. To do that. But I feel it is a bit pretentious to correct someone, right? Like when you go to, I always think of like doctors, like, you know, people that go to school a long time, like doctors and lawyers and things, like they always have to correct, like, excuse me, this is, it's doctor. Do you think they're within their right? Like say a doctor and you're like, hey, Mr. Jones. He's like, excuse me, Dustin, it's Dr. Jones. Would you get annoyed by that? Or do you think that person has earned the right to correct you on their prefix and on their title?
My heart says absolutely. If they want to fucking wear a t-shirt that says call me doctor, like I think that I really you've earned it. You've genuinely earned it. But me, I build fucking cannabis websites. I haven't earned the right for any of that. Like there's not, you know, there's just that 12-year, 15-year commitment to a cause and usually to something that substantially is helping a lot of people. So like, I think they have every right to tell me what to do.
Well, what I want to know, which I guess brings us to our guest. Welcome, by the way, David Patton. You are a Mr. Patton and you're also a lawyer. We'll put you as we don't have a fancy title for you. Maybe just like a cannabis legislative and legal expert. Does that work for you, David Patton?
Sure. We'll go with that. Hello, Mr. Cava. And hello, BC.
Oh, you get a Missy, you get a Mister over there. Is there something? And we'll get to all your backstory. We'll get to why you're on Because Cannabis from Wayward Media at MeetWM on your social media networks. We'll get to all that stuff. Please subscribe, by the way. We'd appreciate that. Is there a thing in the lawyer world? Is there like a title? Do you get to earn a title? I don't know if I've ever heard that. I mean, I get you get maybe a suffix. You get like letters after your name as a lawyer. What's the pretentiously thing for a lawyer to put in their title and emboss on their business card.
That would be Esquire.
Oh, Esquire. Is that where Esquire comes from? It's a lawyer thing?
John A. Smith, capital ESQ, period. Esquire. But you know what? I never use it because I think it's dumb. Because, well, I, it, You really want to know why I don't use it?
Please.
All right, I am an Irish nationalist, which means I hate monarchy, which means I reject all royal titles. And Esquire, it comes from that, you know, that no, that, you know, that monarchy concept. And I don't know why American lawyers started using ESQ. I think it's because lawyers didn't have their own title, and all the PhDs don't think we're real doctors.
See, it's a title thing, right? It's 100%
it's a title thing.
A title thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's the way.
Right. And I mean, after my ancestors have been oppressed by monarchy for nearly a millennium, the last thing I'm going to do is, you know, tack on Esquire
yeah,
after my name.
We go deep.
Yeah, exactly.
Here. We go deep to open the show. We go deep into the monarchy of the American society and our English culture and the use of suffixes and prefixes. I never really I'll tell you the first thing, and it's probably my age, I guess. When I think of Esquire, I always think of Bill S. Preston Esquire from
yes,
Bill
so do
Ted's
I.
Adventure,
yeah.
Right? Ted Theater Logan, which is the first time I think I heard Esquire, and I don't know if I really knew until just now. I was today's years old, thanks to David Patton, because of the Esquire thing. So it's not a earned title. It's not something that's well known. Like, they don't give you like a plaque that says you're now an Esquire. They don't put you on the knee and like knight you with like a big law book that you are now an Esquire, David Patton.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you know, the royalty, you know, like in England, for example, they still have knights, you know, but, you know, instead of being a warrior fighting for the king, you know, they give them to
like
musicians.
Paul McCartney.
Stars.
Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah,
yeah, if England Sir gets Paul. Invaded, they're screwed, right? Paul McCartney and like John Williams are not going to protect you, right? Like, that's not going to happen. Elton John is not going to come in while somebody's riding a dragon and like save you. I got, unless
you know, maybe,
it's like one of those sing-offs.
Maybe Sir Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard, no. could save the realm. But with that, you know, you got to get you got to kneel before the king, and he has to tap you on the shoulder with a sword and, you know, rise, Sir Dustin Cava, and be recognized. And but you know what? Under American law, American citizens aren't allowed to accept royal titles. So, which is an even dumber reason why lawyers run around calling themselves Esquire. So yeah, I hate it. I don't.
Is there?
It.
Are you going to get
just
trouble in
Dave.
The lawyer world? Just call me Dave. Oh, David Patton, cannabis right. legal. Expert, I guess, cannabis legal person. You work for a lot of different places. You have a lot of different things, David, that we talked about a little bit. You know, you work for a couple different agencies. You've had cannabis law. You've been focusing on that for several years, you know, since your son. And so let's start there. Let's just kind of do a brief introduction. I know I've spoken with you a little bit. There's an old episode of Wayward Planet. Check that out.
Yep.
One of David's and I's first conversations. Let's go with there. Let's just learn a little bit about you. Let Dustin get to know you a little bit in the audience for Because Cannabis as well, kind of why you got into cannabis law. And then we'll go from there.
Okay, sure. Well, you know, look, you know, I smoked weed in high school, like everyone else did. Pretty much everyone else did. And then I joined the Army when I was 17, and I served 5 years. And, you know, when I was in the, I was on active duty. It was not National Guard or anything. I was, you know, full-time, full-on U.S. Army. And, you know, they had drug screening. So, you know, we were subject to random drug testing. So I didn't use any cocaine, marijuana, nothing when I was in the military. And then I got out and I started college when I was 22. And, you know, I was older than the average freshman, like, you know, 5 years older. So I was kind of out of the party scene. And, you know, I've always been libertarian. I mean, you know, I don't really care what people do, you know, on their own time with themselves or with consenting others, as long as they don't hurt anyone else. So, you know, but I was out of the drug scene. And that remained so up until, you know, through college, law school, and then, you know, even on when I started working as an attorney, that all changed in 2013. My son, he was 6 years old at the time. He's now 15. He had a seizure out of the blue, grand mal seizure. It was terrifying. It scared the hell out of us. There's no family history.
How old at the time?
He was six. He had just started first grade.
Wow.
And he just had his 8th anniversary, 8 years without a seizure. about 3 weeks ago, 8 years. Yeah. But to go back to September of 2013, you know, he has this seizure, and for that first year, none of the medications that the neurologists were giving him were controlling his seizures. He wasn't a candidate for surgery because of the types of seizures he was having. Mm-hmm. And our doctor didn't tell us at the time, but our doctor told us later that he thought our son was going to die because this was such a, I think they use the term idiopathic, you know, which is fancy talk to mean the doctors don't know what the hell's going on. So, you know, we had treatment resistant seizures. And, you know, the thing about epilepsy that, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand who haven't had any experience with it is, you know, it's not as if you have a seizure and then you just shake it off and you're fine. That's not the case. You know, whenever you have a seizure, there's brain damage, there's neurological damage. My son, after about 500 seizures over the course of a year or so, you know, he couldn't feed himself with a spoon when he was 7, you know, and I mean, that's something that a 2-year-old should be able to do. But I mean,
at that rate, you're full time. Like there can't be a moment that you are not with him. It's so often you have no. I can't imagine.
Well, you're just always having to be focused. Oh, yeah. It leaves so little time for family, for other things. As someone, you know, and you just run out of time, and it becomes that focus, which it has to be, but it becomes like draining. Like it just drains.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And Dustin, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, like, you know, if a kid, you know, I don't want to downplay something horrible, like, you see a little kid like on the St. Jude TV commercials, you know, these poor little children with leukemia. Okay. That's freaking horrible. But, you know, but epilepsy is horrible in a different way, because you're right, Dustin, at any moment, you know, the kid could have a seizure, you know? My wife and I, and actually the whole family, because, you know, we have 3 other kids, and, you know, having one kid who's really sick like that and going through something like that, I mean, it affects every other member of the family. So my wife, who happens to be a physician, did some research, and she discovered something called cannabidiol. So she comes to me one day in 2014.
Okay. All
right, yes, CBD. Right. And she says to me, hey, you know, there's this thing in the marijuana plant that doesn't get you high. And I knew nothing, you know, I mean, I knew nothing about cannabis at that point. And I was like, what are you talking about? You know, of course it gets you high. You know, I mean, this is before I learned about cannabinoids.
Yeah. You're in 2014. Hundreds. So Colorado probably right around legalizing, along with, you know, Washington State. You've had a bunch of medicinals, but it's still very much hush hush. I mean, California had been legal for almost 18 years at that point, but still it was not something that was still widely talked about on the news. They didn't talk about it all the time. You weren't the science behind it. And I think it was the 2014 Farm Bill, which is when kind of that 0.3 designation CBD. So that term hadn't even really been put out in the public. It wasn't until the 14 Farm Bill and the 18 Farm Bill that CBD became a thing. So you're really early adopters, basically.
Oh yeah, BC, that's exactly right. Because now, you know, you can go to any store, you know, I can go to Giant, like, you know, Sheets.
Or talk to a doctor about it even, you know, you couldn't even have that conversation with the doctor without repercussions in some other way.
Oh yeah. And that's a big issue. I know all of the major healthcare systems. I'm here in Cleveland, Ohio. So we've got Coke and Pepsi. We've got Cleveland Clinic and University Hospitals. Okay. Both systems have official policies where they don't allow their doctors to be involved in this. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, just bringing it up to a physician would be, you know, potentially risky. You know, the only place you could get CBD back in 2014 was, you had to go out to Colorado Springs and go see the Stanley brothers. And, that's a really fascinating story. If you guys aren't familiar, into it or.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, no. Please.
Okay. So here's the story that I heard. So, there are these 4 brothers. Their last name is Stanley. They live in Colorado Springs, and they were, and I think still are, cannabis cultivators. All right. Well, they developed this plant.
Charlotte's Web. I swear it's
Charlotte's Web. Yeah, that, yes. That's exactly right, Dustin. Right. So they developed this plant that was very low in THC. And the story I heard is that the Stanley brothers tried it and they didn't get high. And they thought, okay, this is a failed experiment. This is a bust. So they called it Hippie's Disappointment. Okay.
That's so, a great name, brother.
Right. So they got this plant, you know, that is, you know, very low in THC, very high in CBD. Okay. At the same time, there was this little girl named Charlotte, and she passed away a couple of years ago, but her epilepsy was even worse than my son's epilepsy. Charlotte was this little tiny baby, like I'm like just maybe a couple months old, and she was having dozens of seizures a day and was just really profoundly sick. I mean, just a really, you know, really horrible case of epilepsy. And Charlotte's mother was doing all this research, and Charlotte's mother discovered that, you know, yeah, there's this thing called CBD, which can help seizures. So Charlotte's mother reached out to the Stanley brothers and said, hey, you know that plant that you guys didn't like? Well, that's exactly what I'm looking for. And so those two got together, and the Stanley brothers started working with that plant again to create a CBD-rich cannabis strain. Mm-hmm. And they started a charity and all this other stuff. I can tell you, see, I have to be careful because I don't want to incriminate myself, but without admitting guilt or liability, I can tell you this. I did go out to Colorado Springs back in 2014, and you know, I flew into Denver, rented a car, drove to Colorado Springs. I went to the Stanley Brothers offices. I met two of the Stanley Brothers, and it was a fascinating experience because I met a family who had a child with treatment-resistant epilepsy. They were originally from New Mexico. They moved to Colorado so that they could have access to CBD for their kid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was just a really, you know, it's like, you know, that, wow, you know, what a thing to be, you know, have to play a small part in. So, you know, got back to Ohio, and then I became a pro medical marijuana activist. And that's when I started getting involved in the local Normal chapters. I got involved with the Ohio Patient Network. And then that's when I met some of the people at the Cleveland, who would go on to establish the Cleveland School of Cannabis. That's how BC and I met.
I'd say, yeah, absolutely.
And so that was my entree into this, into the cannabis world. It was as an activist. And then in 2016, when Ohio passed its medical marijuana law, that gave me the opportunity to pivot my law practice into cannabis. And here we are. I was, you know, 7 years later almost, and I'm still at it, and it's amazing.
I just exited out of my company, and I was 7 years essentially with them. And I can even think back 5 years ago to Charlotte's story inspiring the shop to donate. I think we probably donated $10,000-$15,000 worth of CBD to patients who were making the argument for against Cleveland Clinic, against a couple other organizations. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing to see, it's not amazing. It was, I could see that conundrum that the parents were having, which was, I can't do this here. I think we really are going to have to up and move states. We are going to have to move to Colorado and to just treat our one child, even though we have four other children that have to go along with this. And right. Just that the amount of barriers for the last 10 years for parents has just, it's almost seemed insurmountable when you're in the thick of it, when you don't have an advocate. Of someone who can help voice for your child or for you, for your child, and you're, it's kind of all on your shoulders. And I think it's a powerful thing that you chose after something like that to start being that voice for others, to be able to make the argument that, you know, think something needs to change or that something, you know, whatever the case may be, a business mm-hmm. should exist.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's, I think that it's cruel and it's stupid that some people have a problem with medicinal cannabis or recreational cannabis for that matter. you know, one of the things I did when I got into the industry was I had to answer to my own satisfaction, how can something be illegal federally and yet legal at the state level? Because the American legal system is not supposed to work that way. Mm. You know, in the U.S. Constitution, there's this part, there's this law called the Supremacy Clause, and that says that federal law trumps state law. And if that was ever in doubt, it was resolved by the U.S. Civil War. And I mean, you know, from a strictly legal perspective, you know, one of the legal consequences of the U.S. Civil War was that, you know, the federal law, you know, is, you know, definitely without question trumps state law. Okay. So if something is illegal federally, then it automatically it's illegal at the state level. But with cannabis, we don't see that. And so it's this unprecedented, anomalous legal situation. But, you know, here we are.
Well, and I think, you know, it's been, and, you know, we've talked about the history, and I think a lot of people know this, you know, we go through whether it's California legalized medicinally in 96, and then you had all these other states hop along, and then Colorado and Washington in 14, and now we sit today with some 21 adult use states, like 37 medicinal, a few territories tossed in there, a little Guam, Puerto Rico action. And, you know, and so we sit in this weird spot to where we have federally illegal, but mostly state legal. It's talked about all the time. You can go on any social media. There's reality shows about cannabis. So it's clearly socially normal. And if you go to a state like Colorado or California, which sold $8 billion, or even Florida, which does $1 billion medicinally every year in cannabis, it's pretty normalized. But I think it creates these conundrums for where, and I think you've interestingly like positioned into a lot of times, David, is like into helping entrepreneurs get started up, like navigate a lot of those legal waters and things like that. And so and Dustin and I were just talking, for example, starting up a company, like, for example, is it a good idea if we were to start a Because Cannabis company? Should we call it Because Cannabis, or should we just make it some random name? Because we feel like if we have cannabis, even in our name title, like it puts a giant red flag in some agency somewhere, right? Like, do people still have to operate that way? Is it still a good idea to basically have like not shell companies, but like normal names and try to avoid those red flags? Do you think cannabis companies do get picked on? That's the best word I can think of, from different state and federal agencies more often.
You know what? Not so much from the government side, but definitely if you go down to a bank to open up a bank account and your name is, you know, Crazy Dustin's Cannabis Company.
I know it. I owned we've never met in the past, but I owned a high-end gallery, a smoke shop essentially, of like American artwork, high-end wise. And when we deposited millions of dollars in the bank account, and they still would not give us $1,000 credit card for us to use and act like a normal business. It took me 25,000 hours of work and building the development side of the websites in order to have a credit card processor legitimately allow me to process credit cards for a pipe, which wasn't explicitly being told it was even for cannabis. A tobacco pipe or a pipe in general, you know, and even down to our name, when we were thinking about naming the brand, we named it Inhalables, but we ended up spelling it in such a way that you couldn't even tell what the hell it was. It almost looked like Inhables, or for the first 2 years, the community kind of thought that we were like an independent convenience store or something tucked away in this thing. It helped serve in certain ways until the bank actually started looking at what the heck was going on. And even then we had to make the argument. Fast forward years, when I'm trying to buy my house, that was the last thing a bank who wanted to give me a loan, you know, they didn't accept that the business was doing well, that it was around for 7 years, that we have employees that we have consistently had on the payroll for so many, you know, none of that mattered when it was just this perception about what you're doing and why. So, yeah, the naming thing, it worries us in certain capacities.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I mean, Dustin, yeah, I think your experience is pretty common. What I counsel people to do is pick a boring name, okay? Just pick something boring, and that's your official corporate name. Now, you can go out later and get a trade name, and your trade name can be something more creative, but for your official corporate name of your, you know, like I like to use the limited liability company type of corporate form. But, you know, your LLC should be boring. Your LLC name should be boring, rather, because that's what's going to be on any formal document. Like, you know, so you sign a lease, you know, it's not going to be Crazy Dustin's cannabis company. It's going to be, you know, BC Wayman and Sons LLC or something. You know, I mean, just
sounds
something.
Like a moving company. Sounds like a contractor. Right. Work.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, part because, of the point.
Right. Now, I heard a story. I don't know if it's true because the guy who told me the story is a pathological liar, but it's still a great story.
That casts a lot of doubt onto your story.
It's still a great story. It's still illustration points. Okay, so what he claims is he was operating a dispensary, a medical marijuana dispensary in Michigan, and he had an account with a bank that was a regional bank. They were federally chartered. They were operating throughout the Midwest. So, you know, every day or so, you know, the manager would deposit the money into the bank. And this went on for months, no problem, okay? Then one day, the manager wears a hoodie with a cannabis leaf on the back, okay? She makes the deposit with wearing that. A little while later, they get shut down. The bank says, we're not going to do business with you. So, you know, putting two and two together, they figured, oh my God, you know, this is how they figured out that we're a cannabis company. Uh-huh. I know it's almost a rite of passage and badge of honor to have your account shut down.
Which we have, yes, many times. Everybody dealt with that.
Yeah, exactly. I'll name names. KeyBank, okay? All right. To hell with KeyBank, all right? Those
KeyBank, First Merit, Chase.
No, we are putting the financial institutions on blast today.
I have family at PNC that are like, you look up and they're up there, you know? And even they were like, fuck you, Dustin. Like, you
ain't. Wow. The banks, right. They get mad.
So I moved back to Ohio in 2005, okay? And I had everything with Key. All of my kids' accounts, our mortgage, all of my personal accounts, all of my business accounts, okay? And then this was like right around 2017. So, you know, in 2016, I totally, redesigned my law firm website, okay? And somehow, can I work blue? All right.
You can say whatever you want. This is how we roll. You are responsible for your own words, David Patton. So whatever you say, just know someone else may hear it.
Lower middle management asshole at KeyBank evidently looked at my website and said, oh my God, this guy is providing legal services to the cannabis industry. So they shut down my business accounts. I've been with them from 2005 to, this was like 2017-ish, okay? I'd been with them for a long time, long-standing customer, and they shut down my accounts. And then a year later, they shut down all of my personal accounts, you know, all of my kids' accounts.
Yes.
You know,
yep.
The only thing those bastards kept was my mortgage because, you know, I still.
It was going to take them a little bit more work to kind of finagle out of there and move away. Right. You know, yes, exactly. Takes a little bit after lunch, so no, thank you.
I mean, it still happens. I just saw, we had a past guest. We had Andrew D'Angelo, right? Andrew D'Angelo, who's been around cannabis forever. You know, most banking institutions, he just posted, I think it was on his LinkedIn, that one of his retirement plans or something like dropped him because of they just now realized, oh, he's in cannabis. So it is interesting that it feels like, once again, you still have to walk carefully. It feels weird though. And I think you get this feeling, David, like in a lot of the worlds you're in, whether you're teaching at Morehouse or whether you're traveling to Jamaica to do your consulting work down there, like you are all over the place and you deal with, similar to Dustin and I, everyone that you talk to is pretty much in the industry and you talk about it. You don't think about it. You wear those cannabis shirts until like me, one day I'm going to pick up my daughter and I'm like, oh shit, I gotta button a shirt up. I actually have a spare.
Right.
I keep a hoodie in my car, not as much, but with time I was always picking my daughter up at elementary school and I'd keep a hoodie because I'd come from the school or wearing a cannabis shirt. And it's just, you know, and we've said this before, but if you had like a beer shirt, you wouldn't do it. But with the cannabis shirt, you're just like, I don't want the questions. I don't want parents not letting them. When I've had this happen, parents not letting their kids come over to my house to spend the night because of what I do, right? Just the fact that we talk about it, right? We don't advocate for it. We just literally talk about it like this. Like there's no We're not selling it. We're not glorifying it. We're actually saying how much of a pain in the ass it is to work in the industry. But yeah, it is weird. Right. Those notions just, they stop people. So you have to be careful with that. Have you found yourself like in legal situations, like shunned because you're the weed lawyer? Like do people write like messages anonymously about the weed lawyer?
You know what? Yes and no. So the worst example, first of all, you're right, because, you know, in our world, and I mean us and everyone else who's probably listening, you know, we deal with weed 24/7, 365.
Okay? It's very
it's
normal.
Not a big deal to
yeah,
us.
It's just
right,
a thing.
It, right. Right. It's just like if we were, I don't know, like if we were like, you know, in the pizza business, we'd be dealing with pizza all the time. Okay. Or whatever, you know? Okay. So it's, I mean, we're so desensitized to it. Now, about 3 years ago, Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, their law school had this little program called Non-Traditional Careers in the Law. And so they invited me to speak on this panel. And so, you know, I was there for cannabis. There was another guy there who did video game law, which apparently is a thing. Like
that's people, a thing?
Yeah, I guess people have there are professional video game players. Like people make a lot of money doing this. So now there's laws around it.
That makes sense.
You know, but yeah, so you know, I mean, these were people who were lawyers, but they weren't working in the traditional law firm.
Yes.
Okay. Well, there was a guy on the panel when it was my turn to talk, and this guy was an asshole. Okay. He was, look, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to name names. Okay. This guy used to be a tobacco defense lawyer at Jones Day. Okay. And if you've ever dealt with Jones Day, you know exactly the type of person I'm talking about. Okay. So when it's my turn to talk, this guy next to me just interrupts me, hijacks my moment, and starts telling these law students that, you know, oh, you better not get involved in cannabis because you're going to be on double secret probation. Yeah, he actually used the term double secret probation.
Oh, he went with the
double secret probation.
That's not a real thing, sir. That is a made-up line from
a
movie.
I want to stamp with that on
it. It's from Animal House, and that movie came out like, what, like 1980? Yeah, timely reference, Grandpa. So anyway,
even his references were whack. That's what we're saying.
Right. So he's like, you law students better not get involved because you're going to be in trouble. You know, and I'm just sitting there. I start shaking my head, and then like the students started laughing at him. But what was so remarkable about that was, you know, when I meet somebody, you know, whether they're, you know, in the legal profession or just generally, and they've got a problem with cannabis, like, you know, they think it's the devil's lettuce. To me, that's like meeting someone who thinks the earth is flat. I just can't deal with someone like that. Now, the good news is, all right, so I've actually been out of law school for 24 years now. Okay, so you know my friends and classmates from law school, you know, a lot of them are, you know, they've now graduated into senior positions in these large law firms, mm-hmm. and they're doing god awful corporate litigation, and they're all jealous of me, and they wish they were.
Yes.
Okay, so that's cool.
Awesome.
Most of the younger lawyers I meet, they're like, "Oh, dude, I want to do what you're doing. Yeah, that's so freaking cool." So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I rarely meet a lawyer who's got a problem with what I do. The one big exception is, prosecutors and judges, particularly in Ohio, which kind of leads me into, did you guys want to hear about some of the pro bono work I've been doing recently?
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
Okay, because this will illustrate the obstacles that we have here. So here's the situation, all right? You have a medical marijuana patient. He gets convicted of a crime, all right? The judge sentences him to probation, not prison, probation. It's also called community control, but I just call it probation just to keep it simple. Okay, then the judge puts on the probation condition, no marijuana. Or something like that. You know, no THC, you know, yes. Marijuana for you.
Yeah, no drugs or alcohol or even around certain, you know, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yes. Oh, and don't get me started because, you know, some of these probation conditions are so onerous. But you know, the one that I'm interested in is, you know, no THC for you. Okay, then later the medical marijuana patient who's now on probation will file a motion with the court and he'll say, hey, look, you know, I've got a medical marijuana card. It's legal in Ohio. This is a state court case. This isn't a federal criminal case. You know, I want to use medical marijuana lawfully while I'm on probation. and the judge says no. Okay. Well, I have two of those cases that I'm litigating right now. Okay. One's in Portage County. The other is in Tuscarawas County. And the resistance and the shenanigans that the courts and the prosecutor's offices are doing is, I find it appalling. Because what's happening is the judges, in my view, are not following the law. They are
personal. It's a personal opinion being applied on it. It's like,
yeah, thank you, Dustin. Yeah, that's exact. Yes, they are applying their own personal views. Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, here's why this is bullshit. Let's say, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but my understanding is, I think it's is it the Jehovah's Witnesses who don't believe in blood transfusions?
Yes.
100%. Or okay. So let's say I'm a judge and I'm a devout Jehovah's Witness. Okay. And I've got a guy in my courtroom who's on probation. And I say to this guy, you're not allowed to have a blood transfusion. Oh, even though it's legal in Ohio and your doctor says you need one, no blood transfusion for you. Okay. Could you ever imagine that happening?
No, obviously not. No, right.
But exactly. But
it's not just on a probation.
The same thing is happening with cannabis. And I say, why?
Well, and it's not just probation. It's like I've seen it applied when we were making arguments in court about my son. You know, when I'd split up with his mom, and we were going to in front of the judge. That's exactly how that was. It was, you own a head shop. I know exactly how you do and why you do and what you do, and because of that, I had absolutely no say in court at all. And even when I got And then getting my medical card, I thought maybe I would have a little bit of protection again in court later on. And it does not work that way in any capacity. And so I could see it. It's probation, it's child support. They're just applying it to every judge in every scenario as if it has the word cannabis with it. Even we had a customer who worked at a cultivation facility, had his card by the state that says he's able and allowed to smell like this in his car. And the officer pulling him over and saying, no, that it's a, doesn't matter. I'm searching your car. I have, you know, all probable cause I have, and causing issues with that. So it is, it does. I can feel that being played out in my own personal life and everyone around me.
Right. And you know, this is all public, so I can talk about it. I have to be careful to control myself because.
Yes, I think so.
Well, it is illegal for lawyers to criticize judges. Okay.
I don't know if I knew that. Is it really? It's illegal. Oh, yeah. Like.
Oh, we can have our law license suspended or revoked even.
Do not want to get your law license suspended for
and,
our
and you know what? But all past conversations that we've had so far were not criticism of any judges anywhere.
We can be critical. Well, but that judge is an asshole. I can say that.
Oh, no. BC and Dustin, you're allowed to say that.
I don't know any
you
judges,
still have
though.
Your First Amendment rights. Lawyers have curtailed First Amendment rights with respect to judges, but I'm going to keep this completely factual and I will leave it to you guys and the viewers and listeners to make up your own minds. Okay. There was a judge in Portage County. Her name is Becky Doherty. Okay. It's not her courtroom. The courtroom belongs to the people of Ohio. In the courtroom in which she is assigned, she has placed a sign which reads, quote, marijuana is still illegal, close quote. Okay.
Wow.
Open court, a year ago in open court, my client, I was not his counsel yet, but his previous counsel said to Judge Doherty, Your Honor, my client has a medical marijuana card. Judge Doherty said, I don't want a medical marijuana card. A medical marijuana card means nothing to me, close quote. Now, those are factual statements. I offer them without commentary or editorializing. But I, like I said, I will leave it to the public to decide what to make of that. But that's what we're up against.
Gosh, and that patient already fought to get the darn card in the first place. It wasn't like it was just a $50 fine. And if they just handed him the card, he had to have 2 years worth of medical records. He had to go to an authorized, you know, doctor. There had to be, you know, consultations prior. It's an ordeal. And to go through that when you're in pain or going through some other ailment in which the card is for in the first place, it's just this secondary thing. It's just, again, you know, yeah, it's just... It seems insurmountable at every turn.
Exactly. Right. And you know, but all the what's been happening in these cases is, in my view, the courts and the prosecutors are putting up all these procedural obstacles to avoid deciding this issue on the merits.
And has it been decided ever yet in the state?
Well, you know, that's interesting. So as I was litigating these cases, I filed public records requests with some probation offices. I also had some friends and allies who knew about some cases where probationers have been allowed to use medical marijuana. That, you know, as long as I'm talking about judges who I disagree with, you know, there are some judges out there who are good. You only remember the ones who piss you off. You only remember the ones
that's
who are
good
to you.
But, yeah, for sure.
But there's a judge, I believe she's in Summit County. Okay, now get a load of this case, right? Guy comes to her, okay? You know, he's been accused of a crime. He's going to plead guilty, all right? And he's off for probation. He says to the judge, hey, look, I'm a medical, you know, no, I want to take medical marijuana, okay? And the judge says, well, do you have a car? He's like, no, I don't. Okay, she's all right, fine. She puts this in writing in her order. The judge ordered this guy to go get a medical marijuana card and then come back to court with the card and show it to her. And then she said, if you do that, then I will order the probation authority not to drug test you for cannabis. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Now, this is right next to Portage County. So in one county, you've got a judge who is fine with medical marijuana and recognizing the fact that it is medicine in Ohio under Ohio law. And then literally across the county line, you've got another judge who's taking the exact opposite view. And, you know, I mean, I think that's a pretty clear equal protection violation. But heretofore, the courts and the prosecutors have been working in concert, I think, to avoid having to make this call on the merits. You know, like they said, you know, like one court said, oh, you know, you didn't have a final appealable order. So we're not going to decide your case. Your case is dismissed. Okay. And then in the other court, you know, there was just, I think, some flat out disobedience where the trial court just flat out disobeyed the appellate court. And now I heard through the grapevine that she's going to let the guy off of probation 2 years early to make the case moot. So there's just so much fuckery afoot, and on the law enforcement side, to deny individuals, to deny probationers their lawful rights to use medical marijuana while they're on probation.
Do you think it, like, let's say, you know, and we've been talking, you know, we've talked to some other people on the ballot, maybe November 23 in the state of Ohio, and you obviously have some states which are, you know, way more liberal and they're comfortable with it. Ohio clearly has begrudgingly had this medicinal. Do you think if the state went adult use or recreational, do you think those same judges, do you think that bias, which clearly it sounds like, would be continuing? Or do you think if it was a state law and not so much of a policy, I mean, it's kind of a law, but there's all these different policies. Do you think if it's state law, it changes a little bit with that? Or do you think it just stays the same and it's just the fight continues?
You know what? I don't think so. Even if there were recreational use, adult use, or we want to call it Ohio, I think that these judges who get elected by running as, you know, hard-ass law and order judges would still seek to deprive medical marijuana patients of their medicine.
Mm-hmm. It would just be done in a different way.
Yeah.
Well, but you know what? You might be right, Dustin, but I don't think they would have to do it a different way. So, for example, alcohol is legal. You know, since 1933, with the 21st Amendment, alcohol is now legal in the United States, okay? But you see probation orders where, you know, a probationer might not be allowed to go into a business that sells alcohol.
Mm, okay.
They might not be able to use alcohol. And now, I mean, this gets a little far afield because, you know, my focus is on cannabis law and policy. I'm really not a criminal defense lawyer, okay? But, you know, for example, the Portage County Common Pleas Court, that's the state trial court in Ohio. They have standard issue standing orders, basically. They're standard probation conditions. And I find them appalling. Okay, like, for example, one of them says, if you're on probation in Portage County, Ohio, you're not allowed to associate with minors. Okay, there is no exception if you live with your own children. Okay, so if you're on probation and you live in your own house with your own kids and they're under 18, you've just violated a standing probation order. Okay, there's another standing order in Portage County. It says that probationers shall not engage in offensive conduct. Okay, what in the
hell? Who defines that exactly? When I went to an R-rated movie, or I say bought a porno mag from the gas station, or, you know, what the hell? Who's going to take away my children at that level?
The gas station sell a porno mags.
I don't know. It's been 25 years since I knew if 7-Eleven had.
Okay. Look, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. Okay, I find the Pittsburgh Steelers offensive. If I see someone wearing a Pittsburgh Steelers hat or a T-shirt, that offends me. Okay, so if I'm a Portage County judge, I can revoke someone's probation for wearing Pittsburgh Steelers gear. It's, you know, void for vagueness, unconstitutional. You know, there's also a body of case law that says that there must be a relationship between a probation condition and the underlying crime. Okay, so like, let's say it's a drunk driving
condition. And clearly, okay? Keep them out of the bars.
Right. Exactly. Okay. There's a nexus between the underlying criminal conduct and the probation condition. Okay. You know, don't go to the bar. Okay. But when you have crimes that have nothing to do with drugs, like in the case of my clients, there's zero connection between the crime and drugs. So, you know, these judges, they're violating, in my view, they're violating Ohio Supreme Court case law, which says you can't do that. But these judges seem to think that probation gives them license to micromanage probationers' lives. I mean, like, what's next? As a probation condition, you know, hey, hippie, get a haircut.
I've had weird ass on my probation every day.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I have had some really strange ass from probation officers. And even then, you also have the idea that it can enter into my home at any time, or I may not have the money for the lawyer to make the argument for me. I am a disenfranchised individual, and to go up against some larger system in some capacity would be quite the ask, you know? Mm-hmm. So these are so vague, and these people who are pursuing the vagueness are in a tremendous position of power. I think it's
But you know what? I would like to ask the public defender's offices, why in the hell have you not challenged these standing orders? What the hell's wrong with you? Why are you lying down on the job? I mean, my God, you're not allowed to associate with children? If I'm on probation in Portage County and I'm handing out Halloween candy, okay, I'm just associated with children. Am I now going to go to jail for handing out Halloween candy? That's what the law says. But you know, again, this gets, you know, into, you know, sort of some broader criminal justice concepts. But with respect to marijuana, you know, for a judge to say you're not allowed to have your medical marijuana, lawful medical marijuana, within the state of Ohio, and I'm an Ohio state court judge, to me, that's no different than saying a probationer cannot have, you know, a blood transfusion or aspirin or penicillin. I mean, withholding medicine, that I believe is a serious Eighth Amendment violation. But the courts are preventing decisions that would address those things on the merits. But I'm not going to give up.
No, I was going to say it does get frustrating, I would imagine, like in your spot, like trying to do it. But I think I would assume, and I mean, I think we've all clearly seen progress, like since the day you first started, since 2014 with your son and having to go to Colorado Springs. As we mentioned, CBD is now available literally everywhere. I can't think of a place down the street from me that between gas stations, drugstores, grocery stores.
Yeah.
But
not in all 50 states and not in the same capacity that you think. Can't eat it in certain states.
Those whole regulatories. Do you think we're still, are you hopeful, David, as someone who's been doing this, who's really been in these trenches and these legal trenches and doing these things? Do you see hope? Are you getting frustrated? Like after 6-7 years now of really getting involved in this, and you've branched out a lot, as we talked about, you're working with some initiatives down in Jamaica, you've done other countries, you've done other side projects. Are you feeling positive in the direction we're in, or do you still feel frustrated because of some of these instances that you have to see and be reminded of on a daily basis, these kind of appalling personal biases being brought in versus that?
Well, you know what? I wish I could say yes. See, Dustin, isn't BC, you know, like the, you know, Mr. Sunshine and Rainbows, the glass is half full.
He's the yin.
And I'm usually like, do you know how much work it took 20,000 hours for credit card processing? Like, pessimism comes out quite often.
Between us, the glass is full, right? But we have each have our halves that we focus on.
Well, I thought we would have significant federal reform, cannabis reform in 2013, because that was Obama's second term. He's never going to run for office again. He can do whatever he wants. He's got the Congress behind him. And that would have been the moment. OK, but for whatever reason, Obama didn't do it. OK, you know, and then what you had through the Trump years, you had the Republicans controlled the U.S. House. The Democrats controlled. Republicans had both the House and the Senate. Okay, but what would happen is the House, even with the Republicans in the majority, would pass marijuana reform legislation, and then it would go to the Senate, and Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, who was the Senate Majority Leader, would kill it. He would send it to committee to die. Okay,
then you work for right now.
Mitch
McConnell, I thought, McConnell? Is like, yes, I thought Kentucky hemp.
Is part of some hemp thing in Kentucky now. Yeah.
Okay. Now McConnell was behind the hemp bill, but that's different. Okay. That's different from, because there's, I mean, even though
it a feels biologist like he's would playing both sides the same plant. Yeah, no, well, I feel like you're playing when Kentucky is one of a state that's tried to position themselves like as the CBD capital. They're all in. They see the agricultural, they see the money that it can bring. And McConnell knows that. But I feel like to back the hemp bill and not the THC feels a bit like I'm going to make my money and not let you get it. You know what I mean? Like it feels. He's approving of it, but then saying no, because you're going to cut into my CBD dollars. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, you know what? That could very well be it. And I know that I understand that the Kentucky farmers, the farmers in Kentucky really wanted a hemp bill. So that's why McConnell got behind it. But when Biden got elected in 20, you had the alignment. So the Democrats had the House, the Democrats had the Senate, and the Democrats had the White House. So, you know, so a lot of observers were like, okay, here we go. All right. Well, you know what happened? Vice President Harris made her bones as a law and order California Attorney General. Okay. So she's not cool with weed, even though she admitted to smoking it in college. While she was California Attorney General, she was putting people in jail for doing the same damn thing. And then Biden is an old school reefer madness devotee. You know, he still thinks, you know, it's the devil's lettuce. He still believes in the discredited criminality theory. He still believes in the discredited gateway drug theory. And so, you know, if you ever could get legislation, you know, through the House, through the Democrat House, through the Democrat controlled Senate, and then up to Biden's desk, he would veto it. And then also Chuck Schumer has been bad on this issue as well. You know, we could have had a significant cannabis reform bill come out of the Congress and go to the president's desk, but Schumer just threw all these Christmas tree ornaments on it and it killed the bill. So, you know, I just don't know. You know, it's like if you think back to the Cold War, okay, you know, which U.S. president went to China to meet with the Chinese Communist Party?
Nixon, I thought.
Richard Nixon, okay, the hardcore, you know, war hawk. You know, it's like only Nixon could have gone to China. Well, you know, maybe it's going to take a conservative Republican to pass. I mean, counterintuitively, maybe it will be a conservative Republican. The one thing
that's kind of a neat proposition. That's probably exactly how it's going
to
happen.
But I think it goes back to what happened in Kentucky. I think it goes to the agriculture and to the salt of the earth. And we have had this conversation numerous times when they realize that you could farm this plant like your corn if you could grow it, which tends to float into more rural, which tends to float into more conservative. It's a plant. Farmers across America should be down with this because it can, it's all the other agriculture that's out there. And it's a high profitable, way more profit margin, an investment of per acre, cannabis versus corn per acre, right? You're just going to make more money than soybeans, right? So I think I would not be shocked if it leans that way because you start to see the farmers of America in that industry kind of really push. And that's a big part of the conservative constituency, right? That area, that
right. Well, here's something. Here's a couple things that give me some encouragement. So, do you guys know a guy named Dave Joyce? Dave Joyce. He is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. He's from Ohio, and as I understand it, before he got elected to Congress, he was Geauga County Prosecutor, and so he ran as a law and order conservative Republican. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, typical, right? I mean, that's how Republican, that's when lay Republicans win, you know, you know.
Yes. You appeal to your base. They love to be appealed to.
Right. So Prosecutor Joyce gets elected to U.S. Congress. And now he's the chair of the, co-chair of the cannabis caucus in the U.S. House. Okay. Huh. There's another Republican member of the House from, I think she's from South Carolina. Her last name is Mace, I think, M-A-C-E. Again, you know, conservative South Carolina Republican. She is really great. She's had a, she's introduced a lot of really what I would think be very effective pieces of legislation into
Nancy
the House of Representatives. So you've got, you know, two of the primary reformers are both on the Republican side of the aisle. So, I mean, it just doesn't seem like this issue, you know, really shakes out the way one would expect between, you know, Democrats and Republicans. So, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe President DeSantis in 6 years will be the one to
I would
to
say
sign
no,
the legislation.
They're all in. Like, I would just off that one name, just given the fact that Florida won't go adult use, even though it is by far the single biggest medicinal state in the country. It has the biggest population, the third highest saturation rate of medicinal cannabis, hands and above, as I said, like by 30-40% dollar bill wise, makes more money than any other state in medicinal cannabis. I feel like he, I mean, maybe you legalize it medicinally or something, but he seems to not be a fan of adult use, yet he's making money hand over fist in the medicinal market for his state.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, is it, I really have no patience for people who base their public policy preferences on the Book of Leviticus. Okay. You know, dude, look, look, if you're not hurting anyone else, if you're a competent adult and you're fully informed and you have all the facts and you're not hurting anyone else, it's no one's goddamn business what you do in your private time. If you want to, you know, if you want to smoke weed and, you know, watch cartoons on the couch, have at it. This is America, the land of the free, home of the brave, you know? What is the moral difference between, you know, cannabis and having a glass of wine or a shot of whiskey or a beer? I don't see any.
I don't think what's weird is I think in our circle, and this goes back to being in the people that we talk to all the time in our circle, I think most people are okay with it, right? I think most people are like, Yeah, it's good. It's normal. It's those outsiders who do drink a 12-pack of Bud Light every day who say weed is bad. That's the weird part. Or it's right. Big Pharma money. I don't know what it is. I don't know. David Pad, no one seems to know, but I don't know if we're going to figure out that answer today.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It was such an awesome conversation.
I know. We're just getting started. We're definitely going to have you back on the show, David, to sit and chat. We got a big 4-hour, 20-minute show coming up on April 20th. So hopefully you'll join us for that. Just all sorts of guests that day. There's lots of abilities. We'll put David's link to the patent law firm and some other things in the description and the comments below so you can click it and learn more about David. Don't forget, Because Cannabis every Wednesday, 4:20 p.m., Wayward Media, wayward.media. Make sure you subscribe, as well as don't forget wayward.media/giveaway. Go there for the giveaway, David.
The giveaway.
Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you again next week, everyone.
Thanks,
have a good week.
Thank you.